Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to Wellness with Liz Earle and our menopause special. And today I am seriously delighted to be joined in my tiny studios by the celebrated journalist and broadcaster Kirsty Lang. Yes, indeed. How nervous do I feel to have her sat beside me? A very familiar voice of Radio 4. Kirsty has over 30 years experience as a broadcaster, from working as a foreign correspondent and TV news anchor for BBC World and Channel 4 News. She's written for The Financial Times, The Guardian, The Sunday Times, amongst many other best-loved British publications. These days, of course, you can tune into her on BBC Radio 4, where she presents the culture and arts show Front Row, one of my own personal favourites. But aside from the no doubt fascinating broadcast chat we're about to have, what you may not know is that Kirsty was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 53. And has since been vocal in the press about her decision to continue taking HRT following successful treatment. So much to talk about. Welcome, yes. Kirsty.
Well, I love your studio.
Oh, yes, thank you. It's
much more comfortable than my studio in Broadcasting House, can I just say, and more tastefully decorated.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We do try, but yes, it's very nerve-wracking. Gosh, I'm going to have to fan myself, have you next to me. So we're going to go and do a deep dive into breast cancer and HRT and so many fascinating things that everybody is truly plugged into listening to this particular series. But I know you are such a familiar voice. I would love to hear about your journey and how you got to be one of the main voices in our ears on the airwaves. What was your vocation to your voice work?
I always wanted to be a journalist, but I'm slightly dyslexic.
Are you?
So, yeah. And so I actually figured that it would be easier to go into radio because it wouldn't involve too much spelling.
So love it.
So when I was at university, and I did work on the student paper and so on, I applied to become a BBC graduate trainee. And so pretty much went straight from university into the BBC as a news trainee. And it was a fantastic training scheme. And in those days, this was the 1980s, they would send all us wannabe journalists off to Northern Ireland for our training to work in the newsroom there, because, of course, it was still height of the troubles before the peace agreement. Then I was a foreign correspondent for many years for the BBC. At a certain point, I jumped ship, actually. I went to the Sunday Times and became their Paris correspondent, which was a fantastic job in the 90s. And I remember when I delivered my very first article, and this was sort of just prior to decent spell check and so on, the foreign editor rang me back and he goes, "Well, you can write, but you can't spell." So I said, "Isn't that what sub-editors are for?"
Sounds very glamorous, but yes, Paris correspondent.
It was fabulous. Actually, yeah. It was fantastic, and I had a lovely few years living in Paris, and then came back and joined Channel 4, mm-hmm. where I was a newsreader for many years. I basically went into newsreading because by that time I had children, and being a foreign correspondent's difficult when you've got small kids, because you could be sent off at any one time.
So how many do you have?
Well, I've only got one of my own, but I had by that time acquired a couple of stepchildren.
Right.
So that was why. And I did news reading for quite a long time, and then decided I really wanted to go back into radio. I had started in radio and loved it and sort of been sidetracked a little bit into television. Went to see the then head of Radio 4. And she said, how about doing some arts programmes? How about doing Front Row? And that's when I started doing that. So, and it was great, really, because I'd just been covering death and destruction for so long as a news reporter. It was quite nice suddenly to be paid to go to the theatre.
Gosh, and films, yeah, that is a dream job, isn't it? So
but I've carried on doing bits and pieces of writing on the side. And so when I was diagnosed with cancer, I think it's almost sort of an automatic thing for a journalist. You just kind of, everything that happens to you is material.
Yes.
And it was also quite a useful way of working it through, because you can use the excuse of writing an article to ring up leading experts and basically get free diagnosis or second opinions.
Would you give me your view on this? So when were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed exactly 3 years ago.
And how did that happen?
I went for a routine mammogram, got a letter from my local NHS hospital, because I was by that time 53, and you are routinely offered mammograms after the age of 50. I almost didn't go for the appointment, because the year before I'd had a pain in my left breast and I'd gone to see my GP. And I've got a very good NHS GP, and she immediately referred me to, because I do have some family history of breast cancer. My grandmother, maternal grandmother, died of breast cancer in her 50s.
So relatively young.
Relatively young.
Yeah, that's a key thing.
So that immediately put up a bit of a red flag for them. And so I was referred to the breast unit at my local hospital. I had a scan, I had a mammogram, I saw a surgeon, and I was clear the year before. So I was quite surprised when I got this call-in letter from the hospital, and I went to the reception desk and sort of said, look, I had one last year and it was clear, do I really need another one? And the woman at reception went, well, probably not, but I don't know, you're here now, why don't you stay? And I said, how many women are in front of me? She said, because it was a really sunny afternoon and I sort of...
Much more tempting to stay
outside. Yes, I could go and sit in my garden. But I thought, too, okay. And so I stayed and I had it. And, you know, the moment she did that mammogram, because I've had a few mammograms, I knew there was something wrong. I could see on her face.
And that was just 12 months after your previous mammogram said you were all clear.
Yeah. And I must say they swung into action very quickly, because there are obviously targets around this now. And within a week, I had a biopsy. I was called in for a biopsy. They found that I had two lumps in my breast. One of them was benign and one of them was cancerous. And what's more, it was what's known as a grade 3 cancer. So there's grade 1, which is very slow growing, 2, a little bit faster, and 3 means that the cells are dividing very, very quickly. In other words, it's on the move.
Mm.
Now, I had been on HRT for 5 years at that point, nearly 5 years. And the moment I was diagnosed, my very first question to my to the surgeon who saw me that day to give me the diagnosis was, oh my God, is it my fault? Is it because I was taking HIT?
And what did he or she say?
He said, probably not. It's more likely to do with your family history and probably certain lifestyle factors. I'm an ex-smoker, probably drink a little bit too much alcohol, those kind of things.
Yeah.
But he said, and this was really frightening, he said, it's possible, though, because you've got an estrogen-sensitive cancer, that the HRT would have acted like a fertiliser on the tumour.
Mm.
So, of course, I went home and I just threw it all in the bin.
Right.
Fertiliser, just imagining kind of, you know.
Well, we'll come on to that. What I wanted to hear about at the time of diagnosis, when you had your mammogram, can they tell what type of cancer? Can they tell whether it's invasive or not? Or do they have to do the biopsy
for
that?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, but I think they have to do the pathology on the on the tumor. I think you have to wait till it's till you've had the biopsy.
I see, and then sort of culture, because then you have to wait for results, don't you?
Yes,
so they have to do something to it, presumably.
Yeah, and that's when they find out what sort of cancer it is, what grade it is. yeah, basically you have to wait until you have the biopsy and they've done the pathology on it, and that does take some time to find out what sort of cancer you have, and that will determine what kind of treatment you have. Yeah.
Now, this is a very interesting discussion because we are obviously aware of podcasts that I've had recently, or not that long ago, with Professor Michael Baum, who set up the breast cancer screening programme, saying that women should not have routine mammograms because it finds too many of the non-invasive cancers that will just sit there perfectly happily for years and years and years, and that the treatment, the chemo, the radiotherapy, will kill more women than those cancers if they were just left alone. But you are, of course, the exception that proves the rule.
Well, this is it. I mean, if you're Professor Michael Baum, obviously you're looking statistically at large yes. groups of women, and that's his job. I am in a minority, and I realise that. But the fact is that. Had it not been picked up by a mammogram, I couldn't feel the lump.
Could
even
you not?
I knew it was there.
Really?
And because it was fast growing and it had already moved to one of my lymph nodes, I had a micrometastasis, in other words, a little tiny bit of cancer in one of my lymph nodes. The chances are, by the time it started to present, it may well have metastasized. Mm.
And you didn't have any other symptoms? You didn't feel unwell? You weren't suddenly losing lots of weight? You had lots of...
Sadly not.
Oh, dear.
I thought one of the benefits, actually, of having breast cancer and then I later went on to have chemotherapy,
yes.
Was that I would lose weight. And I didn't. I put on weight.
That's extremely unfair, isn't it? So you go home, you throw all your HRT away, you start chemo and radiotherapy. How did you find that? Because there's a very interesting discussion also, isn't there, around radiotherapy?
Well, I think what he said to me was, the surgeon at this point, was he said, obviously we're going to have to operate to take the tumour out. You won't have to have a mastectomy, which I was really relieved about. Because like most women, I was sort of a horror of the idea of having my breast chopped off, you know. I kind of imagine, when I'm thinking about breast cancer, I have this sort of image of there being this kind of sort of like a kind of evil Greek god wanting to take revenge on womankind, going, not only am I going to give you cancer, but I'm going to remove all signs of your femininity. I'm going to chop your breasts off and make you lose your hair. There's something particularly nasty about it, isn't
it?
Yeah,
when you think about it like that.
But anyway, so I was very relieved not to lose my breast. And he said, you're going to have a lumpectomy, and then you will have to have 6 weeks of radiotherapy. And I'm freelance, although I work for the BBC. I don't get sick pay if I don't work.
Right.
And so I was immediately sort of somewhat worried about that. And I said, well, can you do radiotherapy and work? And the surgeon said, I think so. You know, clearly didn't really have much idea, actually. But I had a couple of friends who had had breast cancer. And that night I rang up a very close friend of mine, also a journalist, and she'd had breast cancer. And I said, look, did you work through radiotherapy? And she said, no, I didn't. I was extremely tired. And I think you might find it quite difficult. Now, lots of women do. Let me yes. just say that. But
they're not necessarily presenting a live.
They might not be presenting. Yeah.
Radio.
But she then said to me, but have you heard about intraoperative radiotherapy? Which I hadn't. And this is a new technique, which is relatively new technique. It's now very widespread across the United States and Europe. I mean, in Germany, it's pretty much the go-to treatment, which is that instead of going every day for 6 weeks...
And is it really every day?
Every day you have to go. Weekday, so, you know, 5 days a week for 6 weeks to a radiotherapy unit... you have one big blast of radiotherapy while you're on the operating table. So they open you up, they take out the cancerous lump, and then they have this special machine that just beams radiotherapy onto the tumour bed, so killing the surrounding cells in the breast tissue. Any, you know, remaining cancer cells then.
And you have that once.
And you only have it once. And I was out of hospital that night. I no burning skin, no radiotherapy marks, none of the tiredness associated with radiotherapy.
And you had this on the NHS?
No, Now, it had been an NHS trial.
Right.
But by the time, led by University College Hospital, and originally the trial was to help women who live in rural areas. Because imagine if you live in a rural area and you have to go in for radiotherapy treatment, your local hospital, your radiotherapy unit could be 1 or 2 hours away.
Yeah.
So so they placed 6 of these machines around the country in areas which in mainly rural areas. And I found out that one of the places that take part in the trial was the hospital in Swindon, which doesn't have a radiotherapy unit, so that's all they can offer. But they had had their NHS funding going taken away, so I could only do it privately. Mm. Fortunately, through the BBC, I had Bupa.
Right.
So I was able to have it done privately. However, this led me to campaign to get the National Institute of Clinical Excellence to change the rules. And it is now available on the NHS, but they have not increased the number of machines. So unless you have a local hospital... like the
one
Great
in Swindon.
Western Hospital in Swindon.
So it's still 6 machines in the UK?
It's still 6 machines in the UK. So it's a postcode lottery.
Isn't
and it's
it?
Absolutely shocking. It should be widely available. And I actually think that there are some serious vested interests at stake in this. And I'm not afraid to say that I think that... you know, NHS radiotherapy units rely on early stage breast cancer for about 30% of their work.
Gosh, so 30% of their income, 30% of their workload.
Staff.
So radiographers, if they're treating women for what is it, 6 weeks every day?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it can
and
be
all
3 to 6 weeks. Yeah,
would just disappear,
on...
wouldn't it? Because you'd be having it by the surgeon during the operating procedure, and that's it, job done.
And there's another
thing. And presumably it's much cheaper to do that.
It would be much cheaper.
It
and doesn't make
the woman.
Any sense at all.
No.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
That's a really amazing piece of information.
And the other thing, I think, which is really critical, is that my tumour was on my left side. In other words, it was over my heart. Now, you know, you don't have to be a doctor to kind of figure out that having radiation beamed over your heart every day for 6 weeks. And now they do things like tell you, like I was told that at UCH, at University College Hospital London, that they do this thing where you're encouraged to hold your breath while the, you know, and that kind of protects your heart a bit. I'm sorry, but that did not fill me with comfort.
No.
Hold my breath? I mean, doctors will tell you that it does work, but...
You had the chemo alongside, and presumably did you... So how long were you on chemo for?
So what happened then was... and there's another thing I can recommend for women who are diagnosed with breast cancer, is... So I had that, and then I went to... I was referred to an oncologist, and, of course, it's the oncologist who decides, you know, what drugs you have to take. And I was immediately put on a drug called letrozole, which blocks all estrogen in your body. And now this is like tamoxifen, but it works in a different way. And I'll come back to tamoxifen in a minute because I eventually swapped. But initially I was on letrozole. But because I had this metastasis in my lymph nodes, it was recommended that I had chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. I ummed and ahed about it. It's what's known as, in my case, adjuvant. I can't say that. You know, it's like in other words, it was like a sort of safety net just in case.
Right.
They
yes.
figured all the cancer had been killed, all yes. the cells, but it was a sort of just in case.
Yeah.
And I spent a long time with the oncologist deciding whether not to or not, because he sort of said something like, well, you've got a 95% chance of the cancer not reoccurring. But if you did do chemo, or maybe it was 90%, but if you do chemo, it'll go up to 95. So I kind of went, actually, I think I'll give the chemo a miss.
Yes.
Because I'll do without it. And then eventually, after this very long conversation, he said, usually at this point, Kirsty, patients say to me, what would you say if I was your wife?
Right. Yes, absolutely. That's always a good one to ask.
Okay. What would you tell me to do if I was your wife? And he goes, I said, do chemo.
Really?
Yeah. He said, look, if it comes back in 5 years' time, you're going to find yourself going, oh, God, I should have done the chemo. Mm-hmm. So I did.
And how long was that, the chemo?
I did it for 12 weeks. Now, what I had was a drug called Taxol. It was interesting, actually, because I was listening to your interviews, Michael Baum,
Taxol and tamoxifen.
So Taxol, Michael Baum actually said that it isn't often used for women with breast cancer, but it clearly is. I had it. One of the advantages of Taxol is that you can have it in small weekly doses. Mm-hmm. And I did wish to carry on working. Mm. So I would go for my Taxol on a Friday.
Mm-hmm. Did it make you feel dreadful?
Do you know what? It really wasn't too bad. It really wasn't.
Did you lose your hair?
I used an ice cap.
I've heard about those. So your head was frozen.
So they put basically this kind of ghastly kind of control. You look like a sort of astronaut over your head, and they pump iced water, and it freezes your head.
Yes,
it is so painful. I can't
really.
Tell you. Yeah, you know that feeling that you get when you eat ice cream sometimes.
Yes,
and
your
cold.
Teeth hurt.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what it felt like all over my head. Brain freeze. That kind of ice cream brain freeze.
And how long is it for? How long do they keep the hat on for?
Oh, they keep the hat on for several hours.
What?
Because yes, yeah. It's pretty uncomfortable, but the brain freeze is only really for the first initial bit. So
I wonder if it rejuvenates your brain, because there's this whole technique of cryotherapy now.
Oh.
Where if you freeze your body and you drop your core body temperature down, it's like the high stamina athletes do it to improve performance. Maybe you've got a super brain.
Maybe. You know? I don't know. I haven't really noticed. But as a result, I did lose... I mean, I've got thick hair, so I lost quite a lot of hair. But not all of it. I had a sort of little bald patch on top. Well, it wasn't really bald, but it was very thin. And so I just got myself invested in a really nice little hairpiece, which I just clipped on the top.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone ever noticed.
Yeah. So while you were doing all of that, presumably your HRT is still in the bin.
Yeah.
Complete no-no. When, after you finished your chemo, did you then sort of think, right, I'm beginning to get my life back to normal? You're still on the, what's the one beginning with L?
Letrozole.
So you have zero estrogen in your body. How did you feel on that?
I felt awful because, of course, within, you know, a few weeks, I started to have the original menopausal symptoms I'd had before HRT come back, but this time they were turbocharged. So whereas I would get the occasional hot flush, maybe a few a day, I was getting one or two an hour, dripping with sweat. I mean, I've had to change my entire wardrobe over the last 3 years. You know, I can't wear any synthetic materials. I always have to wear layers of clothes. I would have to change my shirt regularly at the office because it was drenched in sweat.
How did you manage to work through that?
It's really hard.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And what about your sleep? Sleep, absolutely terrible. My poor husband actually said he bought me one of those Dyson fans that goes next to the bed. I can recommend them, actually, sort of blowing out cold air. But the thing is, I was getting these massive temperature swings. You know, it's like having a fever. So one moment you're really, really hot, you know, and then you turn on the fan, and then, you know, because of all the sweat, you're shivering and freezing.
And can they give you anything for that? Because sometimes they'll prescribe antidepressants or something that will help with the vasomotor symptoms.
I was prescribed an antidepressant called venlaxafin, which I do know lots of women have had big success with for those symptoms. I, unfortunately, was one of, I think, a relatively small minority of women who had very bad side effects from venlaxafin. I felt nauseous. And it is important to persist for about 2 or 3 weeks to see whether it works. But after 2 or 3 weeks, I think, do you know what? I felt so ill and bombed out on it. I can't even remember whether it certainly wasn't worth it. I remember thinking I'd rather have hot flushes than this.
Than be numb in your mind.
Yeah. Mm. In the meantime, the letrozole, which literally hoovers up every ounce of estrogen in your body, it dries you up, was giving me the most terrible joint stiffness.
Yeah.
So I was crawling out of bed in the morning like a little old lady with sort of my hands like claws,
oh,
my
Kirsty.
Feet hurting, my knees hurting, everything.
You must have thought that the end of the world had come, really. You know, I just thought, am I going to have to live like this for the rest of my life?
Yes.
Did you try other things? Did you try acupuncture or herbs or supplements? What did you turn to?
Acupuncture does help a bit, definitely. There's no doubt that if you coffee and alcohol are triggers. But again, I'm not sure I wanted. But I, you know, I did.
Did you give all that up?
I did give up coffee and alcohol for a bit, and the symptoms didn't go away. They were a bit better, but actually, I just thought, God, my life's a bit miserable now.
Yeah.
And it's not like I drink a whole lot of coffee. I sort of restrict myself to one, maximum two coffees in the morning. That's it.
Alcohol.
I do like my wine, but I have alcohol-free days now every week, and I think that's quite important. Mm. So I did try quite a lot of things, and none of them, to be honest, have really worked.
What about things like the supplements? Could you take things like soya, the isoflavone supplements, or do they say there's no point because the reason that you take those is because it mimics a phytoestrogen? So don't even bother because
exactly.
It's going to get
don't
wiped
even,
out anyway.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. And the point is that as long as I was on letrozole, because it blocks all estrogen, there was no point in taking anything like that anyway because it would have just zapped it.
So now, moving on 3 years on HRT.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So my epiphany moment came when my breast surgeon, who I'd helped with the campaign to get intraoperative radiotherapy treatment recognised, licensed on the NHS, invited me to a conference. And this was in the autumn of last year, 2018. Because I present radio programmes, people quite often ask me to chair events at conferences. Mm. And this was a conference of breast cancer experts at the Royal Society, with lots of very eminent specialists. including Dr. Avram Blooming, who's an American oncologist who has written a book called Estrogen Matters, which I know you
I mention it. I think he's fab. I've never met him, but I've had email correspondences with
wonderful
him.
Wonderful man. And so I'm, you know, introducing him at this conference, and I sit there spellbound as this man says he has breast cancer patients on HRT, including his own daughter.
And his wife.
And his wife, yes.
Yes, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
So
so you must have been thinking, what on earth?
Yes.
Why is it? And how did that news go down to the whole body of medics in the room listening to this? Was there a gasp and massive intaking of breath?
There wasn't, actually. No. I mean, not that I was aware of.
Mm. I mean, there wasn't a slow hand clap or anything.
No.
You know, he was well received. And
seemed to be well received.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly somebody that, you know, that they respected.
Well, I mean, he's a professor. He did the first lumpectomy operations on breast cancer over in California.
He's very eminent.
Yeah, yeah, very. Yeah, yeah, he's top dog.
And he was quite interesting, actually, because he made, I think one of the questions was, I mean, as you know, many, many medical trials are funded by pharmaceutical companies. And he is, and you know, American doctors are particularly vulnerable in this situation. Mm. He is completely independent and has not.
No, he doesn't have any affiliations at all.
Affiliations.
I was talking to, just an aside, to Professor Baum when he was here with me, and he has become very friendly with Professor Blooming because they share the same views, particularly on HRT post breast cancer. And he went to stay with him in California. And he said he's amazing. He had, you know, if there was any doubt that this man's stature and how just how, you know, big a megastar he is over there, he has the most phenomenal house apparently on the top of a cliff and just outside Beverly Hills. I mean, you know, he's a serious dude and clearly very well respected, and great that he doesn't, you know, he's not in the pay of the drug company.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be because his work is just sort of world.
So I then I sent, you know, I immediately
did you buttonhole him?
I buttonhole him afterwards. And you know, poor thing, he said, look, I can't give you I need to see your records and so on. I can't see any reason why you shouldn't. But this is the critical thing that you need to know.
Yes.
I would have to stop letrozole because letrozole, there's no point in taking HRT with letrozole because letrozole blocks all hormones. So he said, what you need to do is you need to switch to tamoxifen, which is a similar drug. We don't know how tamoxifen works.
Yeah.
But it doesn't block estrogen in your body.
See, that's very interesting because people always say to me, or women always say to me who are taking it, oh, well, I'm on tamoxifen to block the estrogen. But this is something I've learned, is that tamoxifen is not anti-estrogen.
No, it's not. What we think or suspect is that tamoxifen works by blocking the receptors on the cancer cells so that the estrogen can't get to the cancer cells, acting as a sort of little barrier. But that's
in itself, it's not anti-estrogen. It's just blocking the way that the cancer thrives
interacts with
estrogen.
So now, again, I should add that this is all about one's capacity or propensity to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
I am fully aware that the evidence for somebody like me is we don't 100% know to what my risk is as a former breast cancer patient taking hormones. You know, nobody can tell me.
Yeah.
One way or another. The evidence is not there to say that I'm increasing my risk, neither is it there to tell me that I'm decreasing. We just don't know, actually. But I think to just go back a little bit, let's rewind, that what Avram Blooming's book talks about, which is so important, and now you've talked about this in your podcast, is where did this fear of HRT come from? And it came from this very big study in 2002, in the United States, which he argues was deeply flawed, much of the media reporting of it was deeply flawed.
And not only, you know, he and other medics, but many of its authors have publicly apologised for it, saying, "Absolutely, we got it wrong. We have ruined millions of women's lives."
Yeah. So for me, that was pretty convincing. And then, you know, as I say, when I'm a because I'm a journalist, everything's material. I thought, okay, yes, I'll write about my desire to go back on HRT, and I will use this journey to get some expert opinion.
Fabulous.
So I went back to my oncologist and said, "Well,
yes.
What do you think?" And he said, "Well, I've got a small cohort of women on HRT because their quality of life post breast cancer was so terrible that on balance, I think they should go back." He said, "But you don't seem to be suffering that much."
Gosh, if only he knew.
And well, the thing is, I think that's my fault, because
you just gave this impression of coping with it. Everything's fine.
Yeah, because I'm quite stoical, yeah. And I sort of said, and he goes, "Well, I mean, you know, because we don't know, because the jury's out on this, we're not absolutely sure. You know, if you, you know, to be on the side of caution." He's a cautious man. That's why he wanted me to do chemo.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get sued.
He doesn't want to get sued. He said, "You know, if you can stand it, I would put up with it." So I thought, oh, okay. And then I decided to go and see somebody who had also been at that conference with Avram Blooming, which was Dr. Louise Newsom, who, I think is one of this country's leading menopause experts, runs a fantastic clinic in Stratford-upon-Avon. Yeah. And I thought, right, I'm going to go and see her.
Did you?
Because this woman had also given a talk at that conference at the Royal Society, and she was very convincing. And I relayed that conversation about how much are you suffering and can you bear it? And she's been through menopause herself, which really kind of helps.
Yes.
And she said, "Look, Kirsty, if you're having hot flushes at least once an hour, 24 hours a day,
yeah,
that's suffering in my book.
Where is your quality of life? Where's sleep? Yeah. Plus all the other things. You know, you're talking about your joint pains and your hands and your, you know, memory and mood and, oh, my goodness. So what did she put you on? So you had to switch to tamoxifen, first of all. So that was the first step with the oncologist, was it?
Yeah, so switched to tamoxifen.
Was that an easy transition?
Yeah, immediately my joint pain. All women are different. I respond much better to tamoxifen than I did to letrozole.
So is this a case, regardless of the HRT, should post-operative breast cancer patients be given tamoxifen as first choice rather than the estrogen blockers?
Well, I don't think you can say that, because, I mean, letrozole has been incredibly effective in stopping cancer recurrence in postmenopausal women. I mean, the trials are
tamoxifen.
Very good. Yes, but I think letrozole had the edge. But there is now new research that says if you've done 2 years, and I think I did exactly 2 years. I waited till I'd done
Gosh,
2 years on letrozole, at least 2 years, and then switched to tamoxifen. I'm probably getting the same benefit.
Do you think it would be something that you could take straight away? I guess that's a discussion with the oncologist, is whether you could go straight to tamoxifen.
Yes, that would be a discussion with the oncologist. But since all women are different, I would say it's worth trying, you know. So it was always an agreement with my oncologist that I would try letrozole first, and then if the side effects were awful, I would move to tamoxifen.
Yeah.
And I think lots of women swap back and forth. I mean, some women don't do well on tamoxifen.
Right. Yeah. It's so individual.
So individual. So for me, that was what worked.
So what did Louise prescribe for you?
So what Louise prescribed for me is estrogen gel, and I started with just one squirt of the pump a day.
Yeah, one pump.
Progesterone pills.
So the Utrogestone.
Now, this is to protect the lining of your womb.
Yes.
Now, I was a little bit worried about taking this, and so was my oncologist, about me taking this pill orally. He actually suggested that I have a merino coil.
Yes.
I'd had coils before, and it wasn't a very enjoyable experience. And I kind of thought, God, post-menopause, going back to a coil, that's the first thing. And secondly, according to Louise Newsom, the progesterone that they use in the merino coil is a kind of old-style
It's a progestogen rather than a progesterone, yeah.
So what I do now
is
I take my progesterone capsule and every other night I shove it up my fanny.
You shove it up. Excellent.
And
so you take one alternate nights?
Alternate
orally.
Nights. No, I don't take it orally at all.
So every other night, you just pop one in.
Pop it into like a little capsule and you just, you know, pop it in.
It doesn't pop out again.
No. And that way, I'm administering the progesterone locally.
Locally.
And that works for me. I should also say, actually, that before I went back onto full HRT, my oncologist had given me localized HRT
estrogen gel. Did you have it?
That you apply vaginally.
Yes, yeah, so you can get vaginal cream and pessaries
to deal with vaginal dryness.
Yeah.
And there is literally no problem with that in breast cancer at all, because it's such small thing. Because I'd started to get it completely ruined my sex life. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I'd started to get urinary tract infections, which lots of women do.
Absolutely.
I mean, Louise Newsom told me, she says she has women in her surgery who can't even wear trousers because they have such bad vaginal dryness.
Can't sit down, don't go for smear tests because it tears the skin, have recurrent UTIs, constant cystitis, because the whole pH of the vagina changes. So absolutely. So I think, you know, that's hopefully there will be women listening, you know, who may be going through breast cancer or breast cancer treatment who, you know, are not going to go down the whole route of oral HRT, but can benefit from those localised estrogen gels and pessaries and creams. And actually, just as a little point, coming back to your point about Mirena, although it does contain a progestogen, the dose is so microscopic because it's localised, it's in your uterus, so it's delivering it right there. It's the equivalent of one capsule a year.
Wow.
So, you know, so that really puts it into perspective. So rather than taking one every day and it becoming systemic, you're just having...
I mean, if I didn't...
There are lots of options, aren't there?
If I wasn't I've just had some unfortunate experiences with coils and I couldn't, you know, I had to have a local anesthetic the last time I had one in. No. So I just,
but if you can pop one in and that's
so
fine,
I thought,
then
so this was my compromise, was to every other day, yeah.
So what's your regime now? So how long have you been doing that for?
Well, it's a relatively new experiment for me, this. And I'd say it's about... I've only been back on HRT for about 5 or 6 weeks, I feel. Much better.
Oh my goodness, I had no idea. It was
it's really
so
recent.
New.
Yeah.
And you already feel, I mean, you look 100%, I have to say. So
I feel so much better.
Isn't that amazing? So much. Are you sleeping?
I'm sleeping so much better. I'm, it's just, the sweating. I mean, I can't tell you. I just now I felt myself have a little flush, but it was only a little flush.
I couldn't tell at all.
No, you know, whereas, I had this awful moment last year where I chair quite a lot of conferences. I was chairing the Europol conference of chief policemen in the Hague, right?
That is quite hardcore, isn't it?
And in this, very hardcore, especially as a Brit at this point. But anyway,
yes.
And they, like a lot of conference rooms, they had these huge screens projecting all the speakers around the world. And at one point, I glanced up and caught myself on screen introducing some chief police officer with a huge bead of sweat trickling down my nose. It was just so humiliating. The amount of times I haven't been able to... I couldn't take off my jacket because I looked and I could see that there were wet patches all over my silk shirt from the sweat.
All these things that we don't think about. So does it mean a whole new wardrobe now?
Well, yes. I can now wear synthetic materials, save me a fortune on silk shirts.
And are you still on the protocol of one pump?
No. What happened was it wasn't doing much good, the just one pump. It helped a bit. So
this is the oestrogen, obviously.
The oestrogen pump.
Yeah.
So I'm on one pump. So I went back to Louise Newsom and she said, OK, why don't you up the dose to... two pumps at night, one in the morning.
So perhaps getting a better night's sleep.
Getting a better night's sleep,
And how has that been?
That's made a huge difference.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why I like the gel, personally, because you can adapt it. I mean, I know people have patches and they cut them in half or they stick two on or whatever to try and change the dosage, but it's just so... I mean, sometimes I have up to four, actually, when I feel that
I think you can go up to five.
Is it three to five? I thought it was one to four. Okay.
Yeah. I might be wrong.
I'm fine. I'm fine with four. And sometimes I go down to a little bit less.
When I had the patches, they would leave, you know, they'd leave those dark, sticky marks, you know, when you've had a plaster all over my thighs. So I much prefer the gel for that.
And then what about the third in the sort of Holy Trinity, which is the testosterone? Have you discussed that with
Well, her? I have discussed the testosterone, and I am tempted to try testosterone as well, because my energy levels are still relatively low. There's quite a lot of evidence that it improves your cognitive ability as well.
Yeah, memory particularly.
And I think also just in the workplace, it just makes you feel more confident.
Yeah, a little bit sharper.
A little bit sharper.
And a bit clarity of mind, which is helpful.
So I'm thinking about that now.
But it is very early days, as
you
say.
It's very early days. Yeah. So I see this as a 3-month experiment. That's what I kind of agreed with with my surgeon and with Louise Newsom and my oncologist, that we're all kind of, you know, taking part in this experiment together. I'll do for another mammogram and a scan, and I'll have a blood test which will take tumour markers by the end of June, and by that time I will have done over 3 months.
Do you get recalled for an annual mammogram now anyway? Is that something that will happen to you because of your medical history?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. So it sort of depends on what sort of cancer you've had and
on.
But certainly for the first 3 years, they monitor you pretty carefully. Mm. I think as of next year, if I'm still clear, then it'll probably go I'll start having less appointments. Yeah. But at the moment, I'm checked every 6 months. Mm.
So just to be clear, you were on HRT. You had an estrogen receptive, highly aggressive, invasive breast cancer. You've now gone back onto estrogen, HRT.
Mm. I know, it does sound bonkers.
It doesn't to me, because I've spent a long time researching it, but I think to a lot of women and medics listening, there will be those intakes of breath around the country as they hear this.
Yes, and there will, but I think that I have taken a rational, well-informed decision, having spoken to, you know, some of the world's leading experts on this subject.
I think it's also really important to put risk factors in place, because so often, and there is a well-known lady in the media who, you know, often talks about her breast cancer experience and blames it fairly and squarely on HRT, because it happened shortly after, or a few years after she was taking HRT. But she is hugely overweight. And, you know, the risk factor of women being overweight is 10 times anything else. And you mentioned having a glass or two of wine. That's also a high risk factor. I mean, I do that too. I really enjoy a glass of wine, and I will have a glass or two of wine most evenings. And yes, of course, I'm aware that that's increasing my risk of breast cancer. But, you know, I'm aware and I'm healthy. I exercise. I'm, you know, not especially overweight, could probably do with a couple of pounds. But, you know, I do all those other things, eat lots of colourful veg. And I think exercise is a real key, actually. That really drives down your risk factor.
The statistics about breast cancer recurrence and exercise are overwhelming. I mean, I think there was even a study some years ago about, you know, if you did sort of 40 minutes of exercise every day, you had the same risk of recurrence as somebody who was taking tamoxifen for that same period.
Really?
It's really
overwhelming. It's absolutely fascinating.
So I think you're absolutely right. I talked to a wonderful menopause expert in Wales called Charlotte Fleming. She's a gynecologist, and also a breast cancer sufferer herself. And she said the way she explains risk to her patients, and this is women who haven't had breast cancer, of course. There are so few people like me, we don't know where this is going. But what she does is she gets out a chart with 1,000 dots on it, right? So that's 1,000 women. And then she'll say, you know, in a population of 1,000, 22 of these women will get breast cancer regardless, right? So that's 22 red dots, you know. And if they're on HRT, you add something like another 5 or 6 dots.
But that's only the tablet form of HRT.
That's only the tablet, yeah.
Yeah, so not, you know, the gels.
And then if you add wine, regular alcohol consumption, that puts another sort of 5 or 6 dots. But what adds another 22 dots is if your BMI is over 30. In other words, if you're seriously overweight.
Yeah.
That is by far the most dangerous risk factor. And so you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, one of the things I consciously have done since I've started taking HRT again is to, I think the first 2 weeks I didn't have a drink at all. And I've been trying to take much more exercise.
Yes.
I am now drinking the occasional glass of wine again. But what I'm trying to weigh up all those relative risk factors, you know, sort of, so try and lose some weight, try and reduce your alcohol consumption,
but
increase your exercise.
The exercise one is astonishing. And that is, you know, that is as statistically significant as many drug protocols. So, you know, you can almost be prescribed exercise, you know, 40 minutes of exercise a day to reverse your risk.
Yes.
Is really significant. And that's a message that I have not heard. That has not been.
Yeah, no, exercise. In fact, I was sent by my oncologist on a really excellent course called, you know, Moving On from Cancer, where we had all these experts talking to us about diet. And the exercise message was that is more than anything else you can do for yourself. The exercise is key. And in fact, I've really changed my routine as a result of that, because what I'll do now is I'll very often get off the tube a stop earlier and walk. I'll try and build walks into my day. And I listen to podcasts.
Great.
As I walk along.
Buy a backpack.
I've got a backpack.
Great. Yeah. Make it heavier. Just put stuff in it.
Because walking's enough. It doesn't have to be, you know, even if you just, you know, walking the dog for 40 minutes a day, that could end up saving your life.
But of course, we can only walk, or let alone do exercise, if we feel well. Yeah. And if you are dripping with sweat and haven't slept and you're crippled with arthritic type bone pain and aches, that's going to make that even less likely. So it's a real perfect storm there, isn't it?
Exactly.
We need to get away from that. Consider, like you, taking the HRT, get fitter, healthier.
And get depressed. I mean, so many women get, quite rightly, very depressed if they've got menopausal symptoms, and especially if they've had cancer.
Yes.
You can get really down. And as you say, I mean, it's, you know, it's very easy just to sort of crawl under the duvet and say, right, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of women who give up work, retire early and so on because of these things is huge. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be the case. We've got to start looking at this whole business holistically. I mean, I could feel on the letrozole that my body was shriveling up without any estrogen, and I was thinking, gosh, you know, I'm going to get osteoporosis, or you know, I literally felt I was kind of almost aging in a sort of Dorian Gray horrendous way.
Suddenly,
I'm really, really fast.
Yes, gosh. Well, you are certainly not now. It's really lovely to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So inspirational and so very, very interesting. That is all we have time for today. But for more HRT guidance, including the risks, the benefits and how to talk to your GP, be sure to download my e-guide, The Truth About HRT, from LizelleWellbeing.com. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you won't miss the next part of this in-depth menopause special, which will be winging its way rather to your podcasting app tomorrow. Until then, go well. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.